How did you meet?
Well, it's an interesting story. I don't know how much time you have, but I started out playing in more or less punk bands in Toronto, but I met up with a fellow, and his name is Charlie Angus. Right now, he's the New Democrat MP for Timmins James Bay, and we have a band that, you know, we started out in Toronto. And when we got together the first time, I got a call from Charlie and said he was putting a band together and would I be interested in playing bass. So I went along to the practice that he was having, and he started playing all these Stomp and Tom songs, Bud the Spud and Sudbury Saturday Night. And I was a little bit skeptical, I must say. I knew those songs. They're people of my generation. It's sort of, I don't even know where I heard them. It's sort of like in my DNA or whatever. And I thought he was crazy. You're going to go and play in punk bars on Queen Street and you're going to play those kind of songs? I said, yep, that's what we're going to do. So we went and we did it. And it's funny because all the kids at that time, you know, in the late 80s, you know, we had an acoustic band and it was sort of a new thing at the time. They really, it was their music. It's Canadian music. Everybody has a connection to it, right? So we played in that band, the Grievous Angels, for a number of years, and I moved out here and decided that I was going to retire from music. I went to teacher's college. I'm a school teacher right now, and I had said, you know, I'm not going to play anymore. I'm going to get a job. I'm going to work as a teacher. I was just finishing up my year at Queen's Teachers College. It was April, and we were just about to go and get our job. I got a call from a friend of mine in Toronto, and he said, oh, what are you doing this summer? Well, I said, well, not doing very much. Well, how would you like to go on tour? Well, I don't know. I got a new family. My son was just little and don't have a job or anything like that. He said, I thought it was with him, you know, and of course I'm just used to spending my life playing, you know, for $100 a gig or whatever, and I didn't really think that I could do it. He says, oh no, it's not with me. It's with Stomp and Tom. Stomp and Tom. Well, my friend is he's a college DJ in Toronto, Steve Fruitman. He has a show called The Great North Wind. Plays Canadian music and knows a lot of people. So I said, whoa, gee, Steve, you know, he said, oh, Tom called me up. He's looking for a bass player. And so I said, well, I'll have to ask my wife. I can't just do that. And I hung up the phone and I spoke to her later on. I said, oh boy, you know, my friend Steve called me up. He asked me if I'd like to go on tour with Stomp and Tom. And she said to me, well, you realize, Tim, that it's April 1st today and he's probably just joking with you. So I phoned my friend Steve back, and I couldn't really, I got his answering machine, and I said, he said he still got the tape. I said, you know, Steve, it sounds like a great opportunity, but if you're pulling my leg, I'm going to come down there and kill you. And I didn't hear back from him, and then the next day I got a call. Hello, is this Tim Hadley? And it was Stomp and Tom on the other end. It's like, holy cow, you know. We're going on tour this summer. I said, do you want to, interested in doing that? And I was like, well, geez, Tom, you know, that's what I've been working towards all my life, right? I would love to do that. Do you want me to come down and do an audition for you and, you know, see how I play? He said, well, he said, I'm going in the studio tomorrow night. Be at my house at 6:30. We're going to record a song. So I drove to his house, and you know, he has a very beautiful place that he lives in with his wife, and he has a big bar in his house with a big pool table and everything like that. And I thought, oh, we're gonna go and rehearse and get ready to do the song, but no, it just was a get to know you and have a beer and let's see how you're doing. And a little bit later, we headed down to the studio and we went in and we recorded the song right there, and that was, I guess, my audition for the band, and I've been playing with Tom ever since.
When was that? Do you remember what
2001? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I got the call April 1st, 2001. I think we recorded the song on the 3rd or the 4th. Okay. And that, at the time, there was a story in the news about a girl, Erica Nortby, who was a baby in Calgary who had frozen. And she had been declared dead, but then she had come back to life and stuff. So he wrote a song, an Erica Nortby song, And that was the first time that that I met him. So we went right in the studio, and then shortly after that, we went on a tour of an 8-week tour of Canada.
Cool.
In fact, I got my job as a teacher just before the very first gig we played, which was in Brantford. In those days, I didn't have a cell phone. 2001, they were pretty new and stuff. A few people had them, and I was trying to get in with the Hastings board, and I had an interview with the principal, and I had to borrow a cell phone from one of the tour security people and call up the principal and say, "Oh, hi, can I?" So I managed to get hired and play my first gig with Tom on the same day.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was fun.
So what was it like working with Stomp and Tom?
Oh, it was great. I mean, I can't even begin to describe. You know, I think people see the character Stomp and Tom, you know, the fellow with the big black cowboy hat and the stomp and boot. And I was very fortunate in that I was able to really get to know Tom Connors. You know, he was a remarkable man. He was extremely intelligent, very much in control of everything that he did. You know, from his business life to his philosophy on life to, you know, the way that he lived.
So when it came to kind of putting songs together and going on tour, did he have a kind of a specific style that he worked, or he just kind of took from everybody and worked with that, or?
I don't understand what you mean.
When it came to his, like you were saying,
he wrote over 2,000 songs.
But I mean, like his work ethic. When it came to, I know he had a strong work ethic. Did
yeah.
He kind of he had his mind. He knew what he was doing, or did he kind of incorporate what everyone else kind of took suggestions and?
Oh no, I don't think he ever took suggestions from anyone. No, he was his own man, and I think that, you know, he, like I said, he engineered his life to be the way that he wanted it to be. He didn't, you know, people have called him a folk troubadour in the mold of Woody Guthrie kind of thing. But to tell you the truth, Tom really didn't know who Woody Guthrie was until after he'd already made it. He grew up in a time when Canada, you know, the music in Canada was what he called country music, and that was a music that's never heard anymore. People like Wilf Carter and Hank Snow, who were the pioneers of country music in Canada, and he really felt that he was coming from that tradition, and I don't think that, you know, he felt much kinship towards the music that they call country music today. You know, for him, it wasn't the slick kind of Shania Twain, but he said when we recorded his last album that one of the reasons that he wanted to do it was because he didn't think that anybody in the modern generation could really sing those really heart-wrenching tear-jerkers that were so popular in the past. I think he felt that a lot of the music today is a little bit trite, and I know he's remembered for a lot of his humorous songs, but he had an encyclopedic memory of songs. He could sing at the drop of a hat, he said, 2,500 different songs from start to finish that weren't just his songs, but songs that had been written by. He could sing every Hank Williams song, he could sing every Hank Snow song, he could sing every Hank Lachlan song, he could sing every Hank Thompson song. We had nights where we'd sit around the hotel room and he'd, well, it'd be a Hank night tonight, and we'd just play songs by people called Hank, because everybody in the 50s that played music was called Hank, right? He knew all those songs and he could play them at the drop of a hat. I've seen him sit around at a campfire at his house and he'd play a song and his wife would look over, she'd been married to him for, you know, I don't know, 40 years or whatever, and say, "I never heard you play that song before." And it would just, you know, he had an amazing mind. On tour, we used to play chess and Scrabble and things like that. He was very, he enjoyed playing games and doing that kind of thing.
Do you have a favorite song that you like to play that is of his?
Oof, boy, I don't know. Yeah, we did a few. It was like, I tell you, playing with Tom was like a cross between being in the Beatles and the Grateful Dead, because when he would go out, he would have no set program that he was. There was no set list or whatever. You knew that the first song was going to be Bud the Spud, and at the end of the night, he'd play Sudbury Saturday Night for an encore. He'd tailor his show to how he was feeling, how he felt the audience respond to him, where he was in the country, because he had songs about every different area, every different region of the country that he'd been through, and. For us in the band, it was keeping us on our toes, because we had to really listen to what he was doing, his introductions to the songs and stuff, to know even what he was going to play next, because he wouldn't necessarily let us know. He just, you know, and then there he'd go. He'd be ripping off into a song, and and we'd be following him.
So what's kind of your strongest memory, or the memory that sticks, besides, you know, joining the band and going on tour? Is there something that kind of the memory that you'll cherish kind of the most? Too many to choose from?
Yeah, there's a lot.
Okay, when was the last time you spoke with him?
I spoke to him on his birthday on February the 9th.
What did you guys talk about?
Well, I wished him a happy birthday. He said that his family just bought him some lobster, so he's going to have a big feed of lobster. So.
Perfect. From your perspective, what do you think that he wants to have been known for in Canada? Like, what's his legacy?
Well, I think that he realized very early on that people in Canada, a lot of them younger people are coming up now, that really don't care about being Canadian. I think he saw that we were being inundated by culture from the United States. So every time you turn on the radio, every time you turn on the TV, every time you listen to social media, everything that we get in Canada comes from the United States. So we're singing songs about Alabama and Texas and everything like that. Well, nobody wants to sing a song about Kirkland Lake. A lot of people in this country come from Kirkland Lake or small towns in Canada. And I think that he really doesn't want the country to become part of the United States. The reason that Canadians are Canadians is because we're different than Americans, but it's so hard today because we're getting, like I said, inundated with American culture all the time. What is there that's Canadian anymore? You know, I mean, certainly you're not going to say that Shania Twain is Canadian, even though she was born in Timmins. She doesn't sing about Canada. She lives in Switzerland or whatever, you know? He looked to people, you know. I think he enjoys people like Corb Lund, who maybe has a little bit more of a Canadian bent, or Tim Huss, who we toured with for two or three tours. People that are gonna sing about being what it means to be Canadian. You know, what it is that keeps us together as a country. You know, he tried to do it in a humorous way, but he also did. There was a serious side to it. You know,
is there something that you'd want kind of the general public to know about Tom that maybe they might not?
Well, I think, like I said, I think that a lot of people just now, you know, I mean, I've been listening to the news for the last 12 hours, and it's been the hockey song. Oh, well, here's this fellow that wrote the hockey song. Oh, well, we all like the hockey song. Well, you know, the hockey song. Hockey song is important. I think it'll probably live forever, but I think that there's a lot of other music that's out there, and I think that Tom did a lot for people of my generation and older to give them a sense of pride and a sense of place about their country, you know, that it's okay to come from the Maritimes, that it's okay to come from small towns or Saskatchewan and, you know, those things that keep us all together.
Perfect. Yeah. Anything you could think of that you wanted to ask?
Could you sum up Tom in three words?
I'll tell you one thing. I'll tell you a story that Tom told me. He likes puzzles, you know, Scrabble and things like that. So he said there was a thing in the Toronto Star, and they asked you to sum up, you know, Canada in, I forget how many words. You can count them. And he sent his answer into the newspaper. He was hoping he was going to win a prize because he liked to do that. He didn't win, but he called a song after it, and he said, "If you don't believe your country should come before yourself, You can better serve your country by living somewhere else. So his thing was, you know, like Canadians should stand here and be Canadian. If you don't want to do that, then it's fine, you know, go to the States. And but I think he was hoping that the people would stay here and fight for Canada.
Mm. Kind of a random question. Do you know how many black hats he had?
He had one hat. The hat that Tom had, he has had forever. He bought it, he said, in a store in Calgary, Alberta, when he was traveling through there. And if you'll notice, Tom's hat is a little different than a regular cowboy hat. The way that he, you know, the way that the top of it is, it was in a very distinct shape.
Mm-hmm.
He called it the horse hoof shape. It's sort of like the shape of a horse hoof. And he carried that hat around. He had some old, I mean, you wouldn't remember them, but in the old days at department stores, they used to give you paper bags with handles on. And he had a couple of these old Eaton's bags that he had this, they carried the hat in. And, you know, over the years, the crew would have to duct tape these bags to make them. But everywhere he went, that hat went with him. There was one hat.
Wow.
One hat, yeah. And that was his hat. And when he put his hat on, he was he became Stompin' Tom. Like I said, Tom Connor's the man, and Stompin' Tom the character. A little, you know, it's hard to, you know, a lot of people would just see Stompin' Tom the character, but you know, that happened when he put the hat on.
Perfect. I think that covers most of my questions.
Yeah.
So.